We're starting a Shechach with Parshas Yisro, and of course Parshas Yisro is an exciting parsha by any standard. The parsha of Matan Torah is so much there, and there's an unusual arichus, an unusual amount of material in the Meshechachma as well. We're going to focus this evening pretty much exclusively on the Meshechachma's dealing with Matan Torah. We're not going to exhaust them in any way, but some beautiful yesodos, some beautiful basic ideas in Hashkafa, which the Meshechachma puts forward in the context of talking about Matan Torah. First, we'll start off on page Kuf Gimel, where on the left-hand side, about halfway down, where the Meshechachma says over a vort, which in certain forms appears in earlier Mefarshim as well. It's one that a lot of people will say in one context or another, but again, the way he presents it is very, very unique. Vayanu chol ha'om yachto vayomru, kol asher dibe Hashem nase. In the beginning of the negotiations over Matan Torah, when Moshe Rabbeinu goes back to the people and tells them that the Ribbono Shel Olam wants to present the Torah, so Vayanu chol ha'om yachtov, the entire nation answered together Vayomru, and they said, kol asher dibe Hashem nase. Whatever HaKadosh Baruch Hu is telling us, na'ase, we shall do. And of course, there's an obvious contrast over here between kol asher dibeir Hashem na'aseh, everything which Hashem tells us we will do, and the end of Parshas Mishpatim, where we find the famous statement that whatever Hashem tells us, na'aseh v'nishma, we will do and we will listen. Why is it over here that we only have na'aseh and not na'aseh v'nishma? So says the Meshechach Nusfalos, hine Mitzvah HaTorah, yesh asher la'kohanim, v'yesh asher la'leviyim, v'yesh l'kayin gadol, v'yesh l'melech, o l'sanhedrin, v'yesh l'mish yesh l'karka, u'bayis. You know, the mitzvahs of the Torah are addressed to various different subgroups within Klal Yisrael, and the truth is, it's really impossible for any one person to be mekayim to fulfill all 613 mitzvahs. There are mitzvahs for kohanim, there are mitzvahs for leviyim. There are mitzvahs for the Kohen Gadol, there are mitzvahs for the Melech, there are mitzvahs for the Sanhedrin, there are mitzvahs for people who have real estate, right? You know, and you know, there are all these different groups, and at a certain point, not all of the groups intersect. In other words, if you're a Melech, you can't be a Kohen Gadol. A Melech has to come from the Malchus Beis David, a Kohen Gadol has to come from the Zera Aaron. So, Rak l'chlau Yisrael tzricha Torah l'hiskayim. The Torah can only really be fulfilled through Klal Yisrael as a whole. V'chol Yisrael arevim zeh lo zeh, that's why all of Klal Yisrael is responsible one for another, because basically the only way to really keep Torah in its entirety is as a group effort, when we all come together. U'v'kiyumam kulam mikablim schar. And therefore, when we fulfill Torah, ultimately the schar, the reward for keeping Torah, goes to all of us. The same way that Rachmanu Litzlan, a Jew is punished when another Jew does an Aveira, he's saying a very fascinating idea, that when one Jew does a mitzvah, the schar of that mitzvah also goes in some sense to all of the rest of the Jewish people. V'atem son marisi, odom atem. And to this effect, he quotes the pasuk in Yechezkel. Right? Yechezkel, the Ribbono Shel Olam says to Klal Yisrael, "V'atem son marisi, you, the Jewish people, are the sheep over whom I shepherd. Odom atem, you are man." So what do you mean? What do you mean, odom atem? What do you mean, you are man? So he says as follows: Shikol ha'uma ha'Yisraelis, hu odom echad. You are man, meaning you are in a certain sense a single man. You are one unit. You are one entity, right? And as Klal Yisrael is not, you know, a collective of various different individuals, Adam Atem, you basically are, for all intents and purposes, one person. Yesh Asher Hu Kalev, and each person in Klal Yisrael, in a sense, can be correlated with a different organ of the body. There are some people who are like the lev, they're like the heart. Kamo Sha'amur Tzadikim Liban Shel Yisrael, as the Tzadikim are called, the heart of the Jewish people, on page Kuf Gimel. V'yesh Kerosh, V'yesh ke'ayin. There are some Jews who are like the head. There are some Jews who are like the eye. V'hu shenimsa rashi ha'edo, einei ha'edo. That's why we find the concept in Chumash as well as in Chazal, that we can speak of the heads of the congregation or the eyes of the congregation. What do we use these terms? Because the same way a person has various different organs, Klal Yisrael is in a sense one person, all of us are different organs of the person called Klal Yisrael. And every person can fulfill the mitzvah which is his or her mitzvah. And through all of us doing the mitzvahs and putting them together, we become an Adam Shalem, a complete person. Right? If one of us is a kidney, if one of us is an eye, if one of us is a nose, you know, obviously none of us can live, you can't have a nose living by itself, you can't have a kidney, you can't have an eye living by itself. When we each do our role and come together, we become that Adam HaShalem. V'lochein, al mitzvahs she'em l'kayimam tzarech lilmod. So, for that reason, when it comes to a mitzvah that I'm incapable of performing myself personally, the way I connect to that mitzvah is through learning about that mitzvah. As Chazal tells us that if a person learns about the laws of Karban Chatos, it's as if he brought a Karban Chatos. Or alternatively, if we can't learn about the mitzvah, at least we can support those who are learning about the mitzvah. So we can have a connection to the mitzvah through learning. So he says as follows. Now this is a beautiful idea, which is found in earlier Mepharshim as well. In other words, that the Torah was meant to be observed as a nation. No one person can really observe Tayyag mitzvahs, but you know, as a collective, we're able to perform the mitzvahs. But he gives it this following spin. That's why in the end of Parshas Mishpatim we find the Lashon Naaseh V'Nishma. Yesh mehem shenasa ma'ase shayach etzlenu. Yesh shenishma shenilmad v'novin pnimusam v'hilchoseyam v'chukoseyam. What does nasa v'nishma mean? Nasa v'nishma, he says, means like this. Of course, the drush of Chazal is well known, but a little bit different from the drush of Chazal. He suggests as follows. Nasa means that those mitzvahs which we can do personally will do. Nishma means we'll learn about those mitzvahs which we can't personally perform. So in other words, when it comes to any mitzvah, it's basically an either or. Nasa or nishma. Right? That's how he's teaching the Vav. It's because, in other words, certain mitzvahs are asiya, I can actually do them. Certain mitzvahs are shmiya, which he's interpreting to mean the limud. Right? So there's certain things I can do, and there's certain things I can learn about, right? So in one way or the other, I can connect to all the mitzvahs in the Torah. Avokan, anu chol ha'am yachdov, kol asher diber Hashem na'aseh. But here, when it stresses, anu kol ha'am yachdov, that the entire nation answered together, so by the fact that the Klal Yisrael is considering itself one united entity, so they're able to say, not only will we learn the mitzvahs, but kol asher diber Hashem na'aseh. Whatever HaKadosh Baruch Hu commanded, we are able to perform. Not just the mitzvahs which we can personally perform, but even the mitzvahs which I can't personally perform, I can fulfill them through my collective, you know, through my connection to the collective. Sheklalu sa'am ke'echad kulam yachtov yasu kol asher diber Hashem. That all of us together can taka do all of the mitzvahs. Because even if I personally can't do one of the mitzvahs, but I'm just an organ. I'm an organ of this one collective called Klal Yisrael. So as a group, kol asher diber Hashem na'aseh. We don't have to come on to the other option of learning. Not that he's dismissing learning, right? But as we don't need the option of learning in order to connect to all of the mitzvahs. We can connect to all of the mitzvahs simply through the fact that we're one Klal Yisrael who are able to do them. That's why Nishma is eliminated over here. It only speaks about Kol Asher Diber Hashem Na'aseh. So if you take apart this Meshech Chochma, I think what he's saying basically is as follows. There are two paths that a Jew can have to all Tayyag mitzvahs. As an individual, I have the option of either na'aseh or nishma. Those mitzvahs I can personally do, I'll do. Those mitzvahs which I have to do, which I can't do, I'll learn about. So that way, as a yachid, as an individual, I can have a connection to every single mitzvah in the Torah. But there's a way of having a connection to every mitzvah in the Torah that goes beyond that, where I say, look, I'm not approaching Torah as a yachid, as an individual. I'm approaching Torah as part of a tzibur, as part of a community. And collectively, we can observe Torah. If I see myself as being part of the community, so then I can have a shaychus, I can have a connection to every single mitzvah, simply through the fact that I'm part of the community. So when Vayanu Chol Ha'am Yachtov, when all of the people come together, then Kol Asher Diber Hashem Na'aseh. I can connect to every single mitzvah through Asiyah, because when the Kohen does his mitzvah, it's as if I'm doing it, right? There's a concept that I'm connected through this collective. It's very interesting, by the way, there's a famous Beis HaLevi, where the Beis HaLevi also talks about the idea of Nasa V'Nishma. The Beis HaLevi was a slightly older contemporary of the Meshech Chachma. So the Beis HaLevi, Rabbi Yosher Beir Soloveitchik, so he also explains Nasa V'Nishma in the sense that Na'asa is to perform the mitzvahs, Nishma is to learn about the mitzvahs. Beis HaLevi famously says, what does it mean that Klal Yisrael put Na'asa before Nishma? So he says like this, you know, the two levels in which we can learn Torah. We can learn Torah to know what to do, right? But we can learn Torah even when it's not practically relevant. When you're just learning Torah, not just to know what to do, it's not a halachic handbook. You're learning Torah because learning Torah is an end in its own right, and you know will lead you to greater knowledge of HaKadosh Baruch Hu through the Limud HaTorah. So that's the Beis HaLevi says, that's what it means, Nasa V'Nishma. Nasa means we do mitzvahs, and Mimelo, you know, in order to do the mitzvahs properly, you have to learn about the mitzvahs. You want to put on tzitzis, so you have to learn through the Mishnah Berurah Hilchos Tzitzis to know how it's supposed to work. That's Nasa. But Nishma, which again, like the Meshech Chachma, the Beis HaLevi says, means not just we will listen in an auditory sense. Nishma means we will learn it. Nishma means we'll learn Torah even after the Na'aseh, even after we no longer need the knowledge to be able to perform the mitzvah practically. Right? We have all that knowledge already. We know how to do the mitzvahs. But we'll still delve into Torah, Nishma, just to understand it, because learning Torah in its own right is a tremendous thing in its own right, even when it's not necessary in order to know practically what to do. You don't have to learn with an eye towards the bottom line. You have to learn with an eye towards just understanding the Ratzon Hashem. Yeah.
But isn't that shot so it's the more classic shot that we're so ready to do that even before we hear it, we'll do. Because after all, they did not say Nasa V'Nishma and Yisra, they said it in Shvata. So that means that, so since that explains, you know, that explanation is good for you, when you turn the text of Nasa V'Nishma, but the classic way of Nasa V'Nishma, you don't need an answer to why they didn't say
Right. So you're right. I mean, the Meshech Chachma is interpreting differently than the Gemara does, which is right. Shimon Parum Latara. Okay. So that's first of all just a beautiful introduction to the parsha of Kabbalah Satara to have this notion that that Klal Yisrael is one unit, and that basically the mitzvahs which every other Jew is doing are somehow impacting on me in a direct way as well. Take a look at Pasuk on page Kuf Hey, the bottom right of the page. B'mshol Hayovel Hema Yalu Vahar. B'mshol Hayovel Hema Yalu Vahar, which is Perek Yutes. It's ultimately Pasuk Yigimel. Right, but in the Chumash it starts with Perek Yutes Pasuk Yud. Vayomer Hashem al Moshe, HaKadosh Baruch Hu says to Moshe Rabbeinu, Lech el Ha'am, V'kidashtem Hayom U'machar, V'chibstu Simlosam, go to the people, sanctify them. They should cleanse their garments. Wait for the third day. They should be ready for the third day. On the third day, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is going to come down in view of everyone in Har Sinai. You should set off the people from the mountain. Keep them from coming to the mountain. Tell them, Yishamru lachem alos bahar nagaa bikotseyu. Be very, very careful that you shouldn't go up. You shouldn't ascend the mountain or touch it. Kol anogea bahar mos yumos. Anyone who touches the mountain is going to die. Lo siga bo yod kisako yisako lo yoro yoro in behema imish lo yichya. Don't touch it. The person who touches it is going to be struck down, whether beast or man. But bimshol chayovel heima yalu vahar. When you hear the shofar blow for a long time, then it's safe. Matan Torah has ended. And then you're allowed to go up on the mountain. Meaning Moshe Rabbeinu tells the people, starting now, until Matan Torah is over, don't go near the mountain. It's a, the police line, the danger, do not enter. But at the end of Matan Torah, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is going to cause the sound of the shofar to be blown for a long extended period of time. When that happens, that's the safety signal. And then you're allowed to go up on the mountain. You can go up, you can do whatever you want on the mountain. It's lost its sanctity, which it possessed temporarily during Matan Torah. So, in terms of this last instruction, that, by the way, when the siren goes off, the coast is clear, you can go up on the mountain, Meshachach Mekamitz is phallus. It's bottom right of Kufeng. Masha Omar HaHeter Tekef. Veheter de lechuli aleichem omar basof, mishum shalim de Torah derech eretz, shlo yisayim bedover ro, shekosuv lo yichye. Right? Why does Moshe Rabbeinu bother to tell them now that, by the way, at the end of Matan Torah, there'll be a siren, and then you'll be allowed to go up on the mountain? Just, you want to keep things simple. I mean, that's, the general rule. Whenever dealing with people on any level, whenever giving them rules, is don't give people too many things that they have to remember. Try to keep it simple. So, if you would think that the simplest way to do things would be just tell the people, starting now, you're not allowed to go up on Har Sinai. You can't come near to Har Sinai. Now, after Matan Torah, it's going to be mutter to come up on Har Sinai? Okay, so after Matan Torah, Moshe Rabbeinu can get up and make an announcement that it's okay, Why does he have to tell them now that when Matan Torah is over, you're allowed to go up? What was there like a, there was a rest stop on top of the mountain? There was like a tourist stop on top of the mountain. There was something that everybody, there was a bank, there was an ATM. I mean, everybody had to go up. Scenic view. What were they in a rush to go up on top of the mountain? Okay, so after Matan Torah, Moshe Rabbeinu could get up and make an announcement. Why does he have to tell them now before the events? So he says that the Torah here is teaching us something again, which we know is a hanhaga tova, is derech eretz, but it's reading between the lines in the words of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, you see it right here, a person is supposed to be mesayim bedover tov. Whenever you give instructions or say anything, the last thing you end off on should always be a good note. So says the Meshech Chochmah, it's for that reason that the Ribbono Shel Olam included this last instruction, by the way, when the shofar sounds, you can go up on the mountain. Because otherwise, the last thing HaKadosh Baruch Hu would have said would have been, anyone who goes up will die. Adkar. Tarantan. That's it. Right? HaKadosh Baruch Hu doesn't want to end on a dovah ra, on a bad note. So he says, anyone who goes up will die, but you should know when the shofar blows that it's okay. Right? So you end off on a good note. Okay. Okay, let's put it this way. It's a parav a note. Right? It's a parav. It's neutral. Right? It's neutral. It's parav. Right? No, it doesn't...
Oh.
Okay. So hold that thought. Hold that thought. The thought is that it's dafka something positive to go up on the mount, right? At the very least, we'll come back to that in a moment, but at the very least, let's put it this way, I'll hedge my bets, at the very least it's neutral. At the very, very least it's neutral. V'zeh shekivnu chazal de'be'emes kol ikar hados hoyo k'dei lakor milibos b'nei Yisrael in yone avodah zarah. Now he gets into a deeper question. Why did HaKadosh Baruch Hu allow the Jews to go up on Har Sinai after the shofar blew? After Matan Torah was over, why taka were they allowed to go up? I mean, in contrast, I'm sorry? But in contrast, think about the Beis HaMikdash. Right? The Beis HaMikdash is a place which has Kedusha, which is permanent Kedusha, and into which somebody who's not on the right level of Kedusha is not allowed to enter, ever. Right? The Kodesh HaKadoshim only accessible to the Kohen Gadol on Yom Kippur. Right? The Azara only accessible to Kohanim. Right? In other words, you know, the Beis HaMikdash as a totality, Tmeim are not allowed to go in. In other words, you know, the Kedusha of the Beis HaMikdash is forever. Wouldn't you think that the Kedusha of Har Sinai would also be forever? I mean, what is it that the people are allowed to go up after the events are done with? So he says a very important idea in Hashkafa. HaKadosh Baruch Hu wanted, the prime topic on his agenda was to utterly eradicate any semblance of Avodah Zarah from the people. Right? I mean, more so than anything else, they should worship God, 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 and God alone. Right? No idolatry. Right? So that's, and the whole event of Matan Torah, besides revealing the Torah itself, had so many things built into it to wean the Jews away from a notion of Avodah Zarah. In other words, associating divinity with things and places other than God. He wanted to show them kilo ro kol tmuna. He wanted to show Jewish people when God revealed Himself, you didn't see any picture, any depiction. Ki en kedusha b'shum nivra rak lahabara yisparach. He wanted to drive home to the Jewish people the message: no created thing has real kedusha. Now, of course, he doesn't mean that there's no kedusha besides HaKadosh Baruch Hu, but no kedusha on God's level. There's no divinity in anything other than in HaKadosh Baruch Hu Himself. Zeh she'amar shelo tidamu ki ha'har hu inyan kadosh uv'sibaso nigla Hashem alav lo kein b'nei Yisrael ki b'mesho chayov el yalu b'har v'hu ma'on chayos u'behemos. Lest you think that there was, the Jewish people might have thought as follows, and again, to us this is somewhat foreign, but if you think about, you know, very primitive nations or pagans or things of that nature, this would not have been an unusual thought at all. The Jewish people might have reasoned as follows. Why did God come to Har Sinai? There must be some kind of intrinsic holiness in Har Sinai. Har Sinai must have been holy from the get-go. It must have been a place which had a magnetic attraction to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So God came there because it wasn't, you know, which is the cart and which is the horse, right? It's not that God came to Har Sinai and therefore made it holy. We might have thought that it was a holy place to begin with. It had its own, it had its own inherent Kedusha. And that's what enabled God to come down in Har Sinai. Not so. We want you, says the Ribbono Shel Olam, when I'm done with Matan Torah, you go up on Har Sinai, take a look around. It's just a mountain. It's Ma'on Chayos Ubehemos. It's a place where animals live. You know, it's nothing special. Rakul Zman Shahashchino Olov, Hu Kadosh Misibas Kedushas Habore Yisporach Shema. The only thing which makes Har Sinai holy is the presence of God. Once God leaves Har Sinai, so to speak, once Matan Torah is over, it's just a mountain. That's in line with the statement which Chazal have in the Gemara. It's not the place which shows honor to the person brings honor to the place. Right? So similarly, with regard to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, it's not as if there was some inherent Kedusha to Har Sinai which attracted God there, Kadosh Baruch Hu is Kadosh, he lends his Kedusha to Har Sinai. When he leaves Har Sinai, the Kedusha is Bata. V'lochein, b'beis olamim, v'zeh rayon nichbad. This is a very important, beautiful idea, he says. V'lochein, b'beis olamim, sh'kedushas l'olam. So this is true even in the Beis HaMikdash, he says. That Klal Yisrael shouldn't think that there's too much Kedusha in a building, in a place. They should realize that the ultimate source of Kedusha is HaKadosh Baruch Hu alone. We'll see, we'll talk in a few moments. Okay, so why is there Kedusha at all in the Beis HaMikdash? Right? But you know, we should realize that whatever Kedusha the Beis HaMikdash has, and that's eternal, not like Har Sinai, even that is limited in its scope. One shouldn't confuse the Kedusha of the Beis HaMikdash with the eternal Kedusha of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And therefore, he explains an interesting halacha. Even the Beis HaMikdash, which has this eternal Kedusha, lachein shelo yidamu sheyesh Kedusha be'etzem habinyon, lachein mutarim liga kol hatmeim af tmei meisim me'achorav. We know someone who's Tomei is thrown out of the Beis HaMikdash entirely, right? In other words, you're Tomei, you can't come close. One exception. If you come around the back, to behind the Kodesh HaKodashim, the back of the Beis HaMikdash, there the Tomei is allowed to touch. He quotes the Makaris from Chazal. Moshe Darashu B'taras Kohanim, Milo Savo, the Me'acharov Mutarim Ligabo Kohatmeim. You can't come in the front to the Beis HaMikdash if you're a Tomei, but you can come around the back and touch that way. Now, why would that be? I mean, you know, it's so bizarre. Why would the Torah set up a halacha that someone who's Tomei can approach the Beis HaMikdash from behind? You know, come through the back door. I mean, he can't come in, but as, you know, that he could touch the outside of the Beis HaMikdash from the back. So he says, Laharos, dirak mimisha shikain shemo b'sochabayis hazeh ato yore u'bifnim mimenu kodesh lo me'achoro sh'bifnim aluchos v'aidus u'mishkan ha'kofa. By leaving open the possibility of the Tomei touching the back of the Beis HaMikdash, it drives home the point that ultimately, even the Beis HaMikdash with all of its Kedusha, it's a building. Where does the Kedusha come from? HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So even in the Beis HaMikdash, there's a certain portion of it which is stripped of Kedusha to an extent, to drive home that idea that the only true eternal Kedusha is the Kedusha of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. To ascribe that type of eternal Kedusha to anything else, you know, even something as great as the Beis HaMikdash, is to not understand the difference between the Kedusha of Hashem and the Kedusha of a building, of an edifice.
So, this is what the Mashiach Chacham writes, this is what the Rabbi has been explaining to us. It's kind of like the GPS when you turn, when you make the wrong turn, you see, the little voice does it.
Right.
So here it makes perfect sense what you're saying, because even I can say how come that error was so deep? How did they make the wrong turn? So how come they didn't know what you're telling us here now, and we can all nod our heads and say, yeah, that makes a great deal of sense.
Right. So the question is, you know, being that we understand this.
Yeah.
How come those smart people at the time of the Binbar couldn't understand this and couldn't build the Egel Azov? So we spoke about this a little bit, you know, from a different angle in Yom Yahu on Shabbos afternoon, and I think here, I think the following is a good mahalach to approach it. Somewhat based on some comments the Kuzari makes, Rabbi Yehuda Levi makes in the Kuzari. Part of the reason we find it easy to understand is because precisely because we're on a lower madrega, we're not so sensitive to Kedusha. Right? Meaning, you know, for us, the notion that a building is not so Kaddish doesn't seem so radical to us, because the truth is we have a hard time getting our heads around the Kedusha of the Ribbono Shel Olam. Ironically, the Dor that built the Egel HaZahav was incredibly spiritual. They yearned for a connection to HaKadosh Baruch Hu in the deepest possible way. They yearned for it so much that they felt they needed something tangible to latch onto. Right? That's the Egel HaZahav was built. Again, it was a mistake, a terrible mistake, not to minimize it, But they built the Egel Hazav because they were so overflowing with a desire to serve God and a feeling that they couldn't connect to the intangible. This tangible thing would enable them to serve HaKadosh Baruch Hu properly. Right? So when they had a hard time not seeing the Kedusha in inanimate objects like an eagle, like a mountain, like a building, that's because they were very sensitized to Kedusha. They could see Kedusha. They wanted to see Kedusha in all of these things. We're okay with it because we don't see Kedusha anywhere. You know, we have a hard time seeing Kedusha even in those, even to the extent to which Kedusha is present in things. I mean, how many people walk into a shul and are overwhelmed with a sense of Kedusha? Okay, then you feel different. I mean, if we really were overwhelmed with the sense of Kedusha in our Batei Knesios, we'd probably act a lot differently in shul than most of us do, and I include myself in that indictment, you know? I mean, if you really felt, you know, Ein Zekim, Beis Elokim, V'zeh Shar HaShamayim, every time you walked into the shul, you know, you'd act a little bit differently. Maybe you'd act a lot differently, right? So their identification of Kedusha with inanimate objects came from a desire, you know, to see Kedusha in the world. We have an easy time with it, but we have the opposite problem. We need to be told there is Kedusha, not to, you know, to be told that we can, you know, should limit the degree to which we associate Kedusha with inanimate objects. Yeah.
Just to extend that, because I was going to ask a single question before the next question. I don't understand the contradiction between how Klal Yisrael could show such, you know, like, limitations, a limitedness that they're the generation that were once slaves at the beginning of our Zohar, and they can say, "Wait, Meshach HaMatayish Nasa B'Mishra," and at the same time, if they don't have food 1 minute, they want to go back to the shrine. How can they exhibit such a deep insightfulness, you know, and at the same time, as soon as they don't get their meal on time, like right away they might go back to the shrine.
Right. So, you know, you're drawing the seeming contradictions between the generation that was there. You know, they left Mitzrayim. You figure it'd be wonderful, you know, back there in Mitzrayim. You know, you'd figure they'd be so happy to get out, and yet, you know, with all of their deep understanding, they're running back to Mitzrayim. Yeah, 100%. So, yeah. Yeah, that's the Rambam writes. The Rambam writes that the Mikdash has eternal Kedusha because the Shulchan Aruch departed.
Right.
No, 100%. But he's saying even in the Beis HaMikdash, the HaKadosh Baruch Hu, so to speak, left over a portion that would not be totally Kadosh, you know, in order to demonstrate this idea. Yeah, no, but it's different because of the eternal presence of the Shekhinah. Let me just come back to Reb David's question for a moment. So, how do you explain the conduct of the generation that left Mitzrayim? On the one hand, you know, they're running back to Mitzrayim the first chance that they get. You know, they're anxious to go back to Mitzrayim the first chance that they get. On the other hand, they're so, you know, they have such depth of understanding and the like. So, one answer might be, well, there are different factions within Klal Yisrael. That's, you come back to the Erev Rav, you know, so maybe the Erev Rav are behind a lot of the seemier things that are happening during that generation, but, you know, the people as a totality are on a higher madreika. Part of it, I think, beyond that, might relate to the following thing. It's scary to be on such a high madreika. And every once in a while, Klal Yisrael, precisely because they have such a depth of understanding and of desire, it's so intense that, you know, from time to time they just can't deal with it. Let's go back to Mitzrayim is basically a way of saying, wow, we can't handle this madrega that we're on. Let's just go back to when times were a little bit simpler. I mean, Moshe Lamad Avedona, you have good guys, you know, who go off to Eretz Yisrael to learn in yeshiva for a year, for 2 years, for 3 years, and they're learning with tremendous hasmada and intensity, and oftentimes in ways in which they never learned before in their entire lives. And every once in a while during that period of time, there's just this day where they wake up in the morning and just say, I'm overcome by the intensity. Right? I need what they call a mental health day. I need to get out of here and just go do something because it's just so intense. I feel I'm going to explode from this intensity. It's precisely because they have such an intensity that they need every once in a while. The need is that much greater to just uncork the valve and to let some of the pressure out once in a while. Maybe that's pshat in Nitna Rosh Nashuva Mitzrayimon, precisely because they were on such a high madrega. At certain points they said, we can't take this anymore. You know, this is, you know, the pressure is going to kill us. We'd prefer the life in Mitzrayim with all of its difficulties, because at least then we didn't have to deal with this intensity of Kedusha. It's difficult dealing with such an intensity of commitment to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Right. Right. So there, the explanation, the explanation is that they wanted to be lamala min hateva in the midbar. They didn't want to go into Eretz Yisrael and actually have to go out and work, achmona litzlan, for a living. Right.
They didn't want to get to Eretz Yisrael or Malam and Teva because that would make a commitment to Hashem.
Also, I've heard the explanation the opposite way. In other words, in the midbar, they had the mon, they had the slav, you know, they had the be'er, they had all these nisim. When they went to Eretz Yisrael, they'd have to work for a living, Rachmat al-Islam, you know. So that's, they couldn't abide that idea, so they said, let's stay in the midbar. So an interesting joke recently. Say, why do yeshiva guys not know Tanakh? Right? So the story goes, a yeshiva guy once picked up Hebrew-English Tanakh, and he's flipping through, and he sees, oh, the Book of Job. The Book of Job? Rachmat al-Islam. I don't want to read this book. So he slams the cover. You know, that's the last time that he ever had a havam, to look at a Tanakh. Okay, right? That he gave it to his wife.
So, Rabbi, you're explaining that their, so to speak, their impatience came from the madriga that they're on. Yet, again, what little I know, they 10 times they frustrated, if that's the right word, Moshe Rabbeinu. He calls them on Kishir, or he goes further with his declaration about their stubbornness and their impatience, and is being punished for it. So, on top of the explanation that you've given us, there seems to be yet some contradiction that they were not, that their high maturity and their patience was not accepted, was not okay.
No. In other words, HaKadosh Baruch, because of their hamadrega, HaKadosh Baruch calls them to task for their impatience. Meaning their impatience was not a good thing. We're not trying to explain why the impatience was good, because clearly HaKadosh Baruch Hu punished them for that, but at least the impatience should be understandable. In other words, we want to figure out where they're coming from, and as it seems strange that they should be so impatient on the one hand, and so holy on the other hand. Just in terms of what you said, their track record is actually pretty good. You know, we read the Chumash, we get this impression, this stubborn, rebellious people. So they started with HaKadosh Baruch Hu 10 times in the desert. 10 times out of 40 years. Not bad. Not bad. Right? Right. I mean, if a person has a teaching career for 40 years, and he or she can look back and say, you know, I had 10 troubled incidents over the course of 40 years... At the beginning, right, and they straightened out, right. You know, the first week of class is always hard, right. You know, so yeah, I mean, yes, there were these incidents, and we focus on them because those are the things that are contained in the Chumash. So when we read the Parashiyos straight, that's what we focus on. But you have to put it in context. It's 10 times out of 40 years. And again, as Rebbetzin Heffler says, and it was a bunch of, you know, growing pains, right, in the very beginning of their relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu and Moshe Rabbeinu. And, you know, when you put it in that context, not so bad already. Okay, so that's one idea the Meshech Chachma says over here. HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants to drive home that Kiddush, that the ultimate Kiddusha is God, and the Kiddusha of inanimate objects is nothing, even to the extent to which it exists, is nothing relative to the Kiddusha of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That's why God removes any Kiddusha from Har Sinai immediately after the event of Matan Torah. That's why even in the Beis HaMikdash with the Kiddusha, because of the presence of the Shekhinah, is there forever. But even there, there's a trap door, you know, there's a chelek of the Beis HaMikdash which lacks Kiddusha. We should always realize that there's always a limit to the Kiddusha of an inanimate objects. A similar idea, he actually brings that a little bit further down towards the bottom of the page. Right? I'm going to start the next paragraph for a moment. And just five lines into that paragraph, the fact, again, when the Shekhinah departs from Har Sinai, the Kedusha departs as well. You know, this fact that the Har Sinai is totally removed from Kedusha after God departs is striking. It requires a little explanation. I would think that once Har Sinai became Kadosh, it should remain Kadosh forever, the same way that we have a concept in Halacha of Tashmishe Kedusha. Items which are Kadosh, even if they're not usable anymore, require Shemus. Your Sefer Torah, you know, gets worn out, your tefillin get worn out, they're not usable anymore. You don't just say, okay, well, the Kedusha's gone, you know, might as well, you know, do whatever with it. No, once it has Kedusha, the Kedusha stays with it forever. So I don't understand. A Sefer Torah, you know, loses its usability and you have to bury it. Har Sinai loses its usability. And we can make it into a theme park. You know, you can just go up and plant a garden, you know, on top of Har Sinai. Why isn't it like Tashmishi Kedusha? Yeah. They made it tonight. Oh, HaKadosh Baruch Hu made it tonight. Okay, so you can say like that. You can say like that. He says another idea, which is very, very interesting, the bottom of the page. Od Nira. He gives one explanation. First, you can look at that. But Od Nira, Kmo Shebeyanu Bekama Mekomos, Dal Yudei Maise Govoa, Lo Niskadesh Shum Dova, Rak Bahakdisho Ha'odom. Fascinating concept, just to throw out there. Kedusha doesn't come from God. Kedusha comes from man. If you think about anything which is Kadosh in Yiddishkeit, the Kedusha is invested in that object by people. That's even true of the Beis HaMikdash. Yeah, the Shekhinah, the presence of the Shekhinah, and the fact that the Shekhinah never departed from the Beis HaMikdash ensures that the Kedusha will remain in the Beis HaMikdash, but we find that there was a sanctification of the Beis HaMikdash. Shlomo HaMelech was Mekadesh, the Beis HaMikdash and the Azara. Yerushalayim was Niskadesh, it was sanctified when it was conquered by David HaMelech, and later on we find the ceremony that takes place in Sefer Ezra, sanctifying the walls of Yerushalayim. Even Eretz Yisrael derives its Kedusha from the acts of human beings. Yehoshua is Mekadesh Eretz Yisrael through Kibush, through conquest. Ezra is Mekadesh Eretz Yisrael through Chazakah, through settlement. There isn't this notion that Eretz Yisrael is somehow sanctified by God, it's chosen by God, but Kedusha is invested in something by human beings. Right? So ironically, Har Sinai, which you would figure would be the holiest place that you could possibly imagine, Har Sinai does not become Kadosh, certainly doesn't remain Kadosh, because the Kedusha of Har Sinai is only from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. For Kedusha to have any tfisa, for Kedusha to have any degree of permanence, it has to come from human beings. And it says the Meshech Chochma, that's implicit in the Pasuk. Lozeh Muchrochim Anu Lefarish HaMikra. Halo Atar Ha'idosa Banu Leymar Hagbel Es Ha'har V'kidashto. Lo Shashem Tzivo LeMoshe Sheyekadesh Ha'har Rak Shehu Shovel Hashem Yisparach Shehu Yekadesh Oso B'mash Yered Le'enei Chol Ha'am Al Ha'har Ve'eno Tzivui Rak Hu Osid. When the Pasuk describes as Hagbel es Ha'am Vikidashta, it's quite possible. Vayomer Moshe Hashem, it's Perek Yutes, Pasuk Chav Gimel. Moshe says to Hashem, Lo Yuchal Ha'am La'alos El Har Sinai. Right? The people are not able to go up to Har Sinai. Ki Ato Ha'idoso Baru Le'mor, because you told us the same. Hagbel es Ha'har, set off the mountain, right, put boundaries around the mountain, v'kidashto. Now, so the article translates v'kidashto and sanctify it, meaning HaKadosh Baruch Hu told Moshe Rabbeinu, you sanctify the mountain. But says the Meshech Chochma, according to what I'm saying, Moshe Rabbeinu couldn't have done any act of sanctifying the mountain, because then the mountain would have remained Kadosh even after HaKadosh Baruch Hu left. So v'kidashto means that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is describing what he is going to do, right? You set off the mountain, and I, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, will come down on the mountain and be mekadesh it. I will sanctify it by virtue of my appearing on it, but that kind of kedusha isn't something which is going to last. Right?
There is a concept of having a temporary kedusha in the other mind, which is the strong and as well.
Mm-hmm. Right, no, so Kedusha by man can be temporary, that's true. Kedusha l'shaita
look.
Lo Kedusha l'osir. There's a Moshe Rabbeinu. Right. See, with the Kedusha Rishona, the Pshat, I mean, the way the Rambam explains it is that the Kedusha Rishona wasn't lasting because the act which was used to invest the Kedusha was undone. And as the Kedusha was invested through conquest, so once Eretz Yisrael was conquered by the Babylonians, so that undid the Maisa Kedusha, which Yehoshua had done. Here, I guess you would say it's, you know, a kind of similar thing. HaKadosh Baruch Hu's Mekadesh the mountain through his presence, and then he left, right? So whatever he invested, he then took out afterwards, right? So you might be able to explain it that way. And the Meshech Chochma wants to go beyond that. The Meshech Chochma wants to say on a fundamental level, you know, the presence of HaKadosh Baruch Hu never serves as a Mekadesh. It has to be something. People are the ones who invest things with Kedusha, not just the presence of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So I think the way the Meshech Chochma would explain is that Har Sinai wasn't even really Kadosh during the time that HaKadosh Baruch Hu's presence was there. It's just, you can't go there because the Shechina is there. Right, but in other words, v'kidashto. By the snare, right. So why was that kadosh according to his interpretation? And Ochinam, it's a very good question. Why was the snare kadosh prior to Matan Torah? What was done to make these? I think you're going to have to say, according to him, that kadosh in this context doesn't really mean an everlasting kedusha. It means, right now, it's off limits. I mean, kadosh means separate, right? This place is off limits because the Shekhinah is here. Go away, right? But not and after he left, after the conversation about the sneh, the sneh isn't holy, right? You know, if he wants to take branches of the sneh and make them into whatever, he has the right to do that. It's not me'ilah. You know, to take branches of the snap. Because HaKadosh Baruch Hu can't really be Mekadosh something through his presence. It's just that while he's there, you know, while the Shekhinah is there, the place we may well becomes off limits. You know, maybe, so I think that fits in with the distinction that he's making. Why should that be? Why should Kedusha only come through the acts of human beings? Yeah, so W wants to say something. Right, I mean, you would think it's... somewhat paradoxical. The ultimate kedusha, right? The ultimate kedusha comes from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So why should it be that human beings, you know, bring kedusha? So the truth is, this is consistent with HaKadosh Baruch Hu's general plan for the world. Right? As the Midrashim explained, that's the Romans taunted the Jews. You know, why does Bris Milah make any sense? Right? I mean, God creates a perfect person. And you Jews, you go, you mutilate the person. You know, what's the idea behind that? So the Medrash famously describes how Turnus Rufus, one of the Roman governors, asked this to Reb Akiva. So Reb Akiva said, what would you prefer to eat? You know, would you prefer to take a stalk of wheat and eat that straight, or would you prefer to have a slice of bread? So the Roman says, of course, I'd prefer to have a slice of bread. So he says, well, HaKadosh Baruch Hu made the wheat, and you're going and mutilating it and making it into flour and ultimately into a loaf of bread? Obviously, you see, the way HaKadosh Baruch Hu made the world is that He made it imperfect, and He wants us as human beings to perfect the world. So that's true in the realm of the physical, and as God made wheat, but we're supposed to turn it into flour and ultimately into bread. It's true in the realm of things like Bris Milah. HaKadosh Baruch Hu made a human being who's imperfect. We perfect the human being by circumcising him, right? And I think the Meshech Chach would say that same idea as well is present in the idea of Kedusha. For HaKadosh Baruch Hu to be Mekadosh something is not a big kuntz. The whole idea of Kedusha means that we human beings take something which HaKadosh Baruch Hu deliberately left chol, and we transform it into something which is kadosh, right? The calendar, zman, right? I mean, there is an example of a zman which is kadosh by HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That's the example of Shabbos. But most of zman is left to the Jewish people to be mekadosh, right? In other words, and the Meshech Chach is suggesting when it comes to makom, when it comes to kedusha of places, so the only kind of kedusha is the kedusha that comes, or things, the only kind of kedusha is the kedusha that comes about from human beings. Because that's the role of human beings. The role of human beings is to take the imperfect world and to bring it up to a state of Kedusha. For HaKadosh Baruch Hu to invest Kedusha in the world would be against the whole plan, where HaKadosh Baruch Hu deliberately did not create a perfect world, leaving it up to us to be able to perfect the world. So that I think is the hashkafa behind this idea which the Meshech Chachma is bringing out. Let's start on a very Yesodistic idea in the Meshech Chachma. It's a long piece. I don't think we'll have time to finish it, but we'll try to hit on some highlights. Right? So on page, what's that? We can play with time, yeah. I think we need a Sanhedrin to do that kind of thing. But if you take a look on page Kuf Yud, the left-hand column, about halfway down, Yeshla his boning. Ma ve'ezeh hishtalmus hayu l'moshe v'kabolas ha-Torah. How did Moshe Rabbeinu become further perfected through Kabolas ha-Torah? After all, ki yish Moshe hayu gadol kodem matan Torah, shnishtalim v'zochel l'ma'alosa. Moshe Rabbeinu was pretty big even before matan Torah, otherwise he wouldn't have been chosen to take the Jews out of Egypt. Uv'ezeh derech po'alo bo Kabolas ha-Torah. In what sense did Kabbalas HaTorah act upon Moshe Rabbeinu? So he suggests the following. V'ho'inyin. K'derach ha'pilosofim asher ha'shleimus el ha'odim hu b'mechuyu v'hechrach v'zeh k'shi yis'atzei nasho b'muskolos u'miseichel ha'hiluni yis'yasig ha'nikne v'yizkel l'seichel ha'nevza alvo ha'eloki. ומצד שנפשו דבוקו למוסקולוס יסתבק על שכל הפועל, ויהיה כושר מעדנוס אילוב תומד, ובזה יקנה הנצחיוס בנפשו. The philosophers say, and here he's talking about medieval philosophers believed that for a person to achieve shleimus, for a person to achieve human perfection, he could only do so through the mind, through the intellect. A person would perfect his intellect, which for the philosophers was synonymous with the soul. The soul and the intellect were the same. A person would perfect his soul, his intellect, by trying to connect it to the divine intellect. The philosophers believed in God. but they believe that the person should connect himself to God through a total intellectual fashion, and that way he would gradually perfect his soul, perfect the intellect. The body is perceived in medieval philosophy, secular medieval, non-Jewish medieval philosophy, as being an impediment to that perfection. Right? A perfection is achieved wholly and solely through the soul, the intellect. The body just gets in the way. The idea of the medieval philosophers is to try to bypass the body. And, you know, there's no hope of perfecting the body. The most you can do is to try to bypass the body in some way. Right? So, first of all, you should know that, you know, once in every couple of generations, somebody actually achieves this madrega of shleimus, because it's very hard to bypass the body. And furthermore, you can ask, so why do people live? I mean, why are people here in this world? Because after all, if the body just gets in the way of perfection, so wouldn't it be much better if, you know, you just had a soul and not a body to get in the way? Right? So, just let's get down a little bit. So, three lines from the bottom. Lo kein heir Hashem yisbarach einer b'torasa. But this is not the hashkaf of our Torah. V'harbe movsim b'ashamayim v'ores laharos ki ha-teva v'ametzius u'kechomer b'yad ha-yotzer v'chol asher yachpots yitneh k'shem sh'b'yodol l'shnosa kach b'yodol halosa l'valosa v'nigolu shamayim k'sefer l'fonov v'l'hapcho l'ein ha-muchlak k'mo sh'hoya. Right, HaKadosh Baruch Hu can make all different kinds of miracles. He can change nature in many, many different ways. To show you, just skipping down a little bit, about 10 lines down, Oz kasher yagbiru b'chirasam al chukei hateva misibas rasan Hashem yisbarach oz yovu lahem ha-shleimus ha-amiti. True shleimus, the Meshech Chochma says, is not by bypassing the material or the physical. True shleimus can be achieved by purifying even our physical bodies. How do we purify our physical bodies? Mitzvos. The fact that mitzvos involve physical actions and physical activities is because those physical activities The fact that mitzvos involve physical activities is because those mitzvos perfect our bodies, not just our souls and our minds. We have limud haTorah to impact on the intellect, right, on the soul, but we also have practical mitzvos. We're not a religion of just abstract philosophical speculation. We do things. Why do we do things? Because we believe that the mitzvos can have an impact on our body. An arm which has tefillin put it on it every day is going to be a purified arm. Right? Legs which walk to do the ratzon habore are going to be purified legs. The body can be brought up to a level of perfection as well. This, he goes on to say, is essentially what Moshe Rabbeinu achieved by Matan Torah. Prior to Matan Torah, Moshe Rabbeinu was a great philosopher, he had a great intellect, he had purified his intellect and his soul. With the receiving of the Torah, Moshe Rabbeinu purified his body as well. Right? And he goes on to make a couple of examples of this. Right? So down at Kuf Yud Aleph, the bottom of the right-hand column, five lines from the bottom. V'lochein Moshe terem kabbalas ha-Torah k'siv shal na'alecha mi'aragelecha. Right, the pasuk you referred to before, by the snare, Moshe Rabbeinu was told to remove his shoes. Interestingly enough, by Matan Torah, we don't find that he's told to remove his shoes. So why is that? I mean, you figure, if by the snare he has to take his shoes off, by Matan Torah, alachas kama v'kama. No. What's the significance of his removing his shoes by the snare? Because by the snare, prior to Matan Torah, the shoes, which are representative of physicality can't be purified prior to Matan Torah. It just gets in the way of our appreciation of God in the spiritual. So take your shoes off, because the only way you can approach God is through the spiritual realm. But after Matan Torah, so then there's no need to take the shoes off, because the very act of Matan Torah says that the chomer, the physical, the material as well, can be purified and used to serve HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Lochein acharei kabbalas haTorah. All of the Har Sinai im chomer yuso. Moshe Rabbeinu, with all of his physicality, goes up on top of Har Sinai. V'zeu malu yilud isha hu achomer beinenu. That's what the Malachim say famously. What's this yilud isha? What's this, you know, man born of woman doing among us? How can a physical entity seek to receive the Torah? Right? Again, he's referring here to the famous Medrash where the Malachim object to Moshe Rabbeinu getting the Torah. Well, you're going to give over the Torah to this physical person, this Basav Adam? And that's the answer that Moshe Rabbeinu gives them. Do you guys do business that you should need all of the laws that pertain to business? Lo sirtzach, lo sinof, kino yesh beinechem, yitzahara yesh beinechem. Right? Do you have murder? Do you have adultery? I mean, all these mitzvahs in the Torah only apply to human beings. Pirush. Kol elu heima inyanim shei mitzvos ma'asios. All of these mitzvahs in the Torah are mitzvahs that apply to to physical actions. V'chein heima ma'adanim heima mezakekim esachomer lofi alof or eloki. Right? These mitzvahs in the Torah is meant not for spiritual beings. The Torah's purpose is to purify the physical. Right? To purify the spiritual doesn't need perfection. The Torah's aim is to purify the physical. V'lochein zoch l'karnei hod k'karnei ha-shemesh. That's why the rays began to emerge from Moshe Rabbeinu's face. Why? Ki gam kufo ha-yodak. Sepiri, ruchani. Because Moshe Rabbeinu, after experiencing God, his very physicality became extremely purified. The rays shone from his face because as his physical body was perfected. Right? Just 2 lines later. That's pshat that no man knows where Moshe Rabbeinu was buried. Ki be'emes ein b'moshe likbor ma'uma. There was nothing of Moshe Rabbeinu to bury. That's why no one knows where his burial place is. Why? Because there was nothing to put in the ground of him. Ki gufo eno tofes shumakom ku etzem ruchni. By the end of Moshe Rabbeinu's life, his body was so transformed into a spiritual entity that it's almost as if, I don't know if he means it literally, but it's almost as if, you know, there was nothing really to bury because he had so transformed his physical body in such a way that his physicality was not like a regular person that you put in the ground and he decomposes. In a sense, he had transcended even the idea of kivura. What exactly that means, I don't know. But he writes, Bino ze, think about this. So think about that, right? Yeah, I don't know. But he has the following idea on this, just the bottom of page Kuf Yud Aleph. V'zeh shebat seres hakol modim deboinin lochem. That's pshat in a strange statement the Gemara makes in Masechta Pesachim, that even though there are differences of opinion in the Tanoim, how to properly celebrate Yontov. Some say that Chatzi Lachem, Chatzi Lachem. Some say Yontov should be divided between spiritual pursuits and physical pursuits, eating and drinking and also learning. Others say, no, Yontov is supposed to be all about learning and spiritual things. But one thing everyone agrees on Shavuos, everybody agrees that you need to eat and drink. Very, very strange. Right? Because after all, if anything, I would say Shavuos, on which the Torah was given, that should be the ultimate spiritual holiday. You should sit and learn all day Shavuos. No blintzes. Eating, drinking. No. Just sit and learn. No. Zeh tachlis min haTorah. Because the whole point of Torah, says the Meshech Chochma, Shekulam yizaku v'yizakiku hachomer v'kochol sav al pi haTorah sheti asher kol tzad ba'olam ha'maisa. Torah is not about the spiritual to the abandonment of the physical. Torah is about being mekadesh, sanctifying the physical aspects of life. I'm sorry? That's what he's arguing. In other words, prior to Matan Torah, you know, basically there were two realms. There was the physical and the spiritual. And the Shiva Mitzvahs B'nai Noach are not about sanctifying the physical. They're just about creating an orderly society. Right? It's totally a social contract. Right? Torah introduces the idea that the physical world can be sanctified. right? That physicality can be sanctified. I'm sorry? The philosophers had it right in a pre-Matan Torah world. Right, that's what I think that's what he would be saying. Right, so in a pre-Matan Torah world, they're right, but in a post-Matan Torah world, they're wrong. Right, so that's on Shavuos. So on Shavuos, there has to be an element of eating and drinking, because it's precisely that physicality which the Torah comes to be mekadesh, to sanctify. So if you're going to spend Shavuos in a very, very spiritual atmosphere that has no physicality associated with it whatsoever, you're not understanding the role that the Torah has to play in this world. You have to use Shavuos as an opportunity to celebrate what it is that the Torah is ultimately doing. Right? And Yom Kippur, right? So Yom Kippur, right? Yom Kippur is the one totally spiritual, non-physical day that we have, right? But on Shavuos, you know, the day of Matan Torah, so then it's celebrated in a physical fashion, the Dafka. There's a lot more here in this piece in particular. He talks about, he believes that to some extent that's the ongoing machlokis between Beis Hillel and Beis Shammai, as to whether one can be mekadesh the physical, or whether or not one has to be totally removed from the physical. You know, the latter being the position of Beis Shammai, Beis Hillel believing that you can be mekadesh the physical. It's worthwhile taking a look at on your own time. And Be'ez Hashem, maybe at some future date, we'll come back to talk a little bit more about this very extensive piece over here.